from the highs of last week to the near heart attacking inducing escapades of this past weekend, welcome to episode 120 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. The P-Hoonian was an epic fail on Name Redacted's part, so I guess we can savour that, plus a second win of the season. To break all these things down and more, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum to do just that.
Well, good evening, Tom. We're recording on our sort of usual Tuesday night, and I think my pulse has just about returned to normal from the end of that game.
Yeah, I was going to say, just the cardiac cards doing what they do best.
That really was down to the last minute for them, and I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it in more detail, but it's a game that I had given up for dead, you know, like right before the last minute. So,
just a weird game, like to and fro, like one minute we're leading, next minute they're leading, you know, so many lead changes in that game.
I feel like the biggest thing was probably the way that the momentum was shifting all over the place as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially with how they start out. They started out and then we like obviously came back and obviously won the game.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't think there's any news this week, so we could just get straight into the game recap.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find any news, but, you know, if anything important breaks, you know, you can listen to that on another podcast. Cause, you know.
Usually, if any important news is happening, it'll be happening approximately now, and it'll be announced on Twitter just when we finish. So, but yeah, let's talk about this game. So Cardinals 34, Vikings 33. Really, really close game. As we've already alluded to, very very tit-for-tat, very retaliatory. I mean, unlike last week, I definitely think there are negatives that are worthwhile talking about in this game.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually got negatives, not like scraping the barrel for some like we had to do last week.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the clear first negative has to be, and especially in the first half, but all throughout the game, after an amazing run defense week in the first week where we managed to hold Derrick Henry to like a career low, Dalvin Cook was just all over us.
As you say, a week removed from shutting down arguably the best running back in the league, who then obviously proceeded to run all over Seattle's D this past weekend. Minnesota running back Dalvin Cook had his way with the Arizona Cardinals defense, you know, holes opened up at will, big run after big run. The defensive line hardly covered itself in glory in this one.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, as you said, the interesting thing is that Derrick Henry then had a really massive day against Seattle. So it's not even as though you could say, oh, well, Derrick Henry must be injured or something like that. No, he's clearly got it. He's clearly okay. So I think that's why this is almost more of a puzzle than it is a negative. I mean, it's definitely a negative from this game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird one because, like, the first half, I say, he was probably, like, averaging, like, 9-10 yards a carry, it seemed.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, I genuinely think that he was picking up just about as many first downs as he had carries. And, you know, the ones that he didn't, he was still picking up 4 or 5 yards. It was rare that we managed to tackle him in the backfield.
It did help that he seemed to be hampered by a couple of injuries as the game progressed because he went down, I think it was at least 2 times.
Yeah, it's something you never like to see, but of course I do think that that would be a big part of why this wasn't as much of a feature in the second half as it was in the first half. I'm sure there was adjustments and things like that being made as well, but I mean, clearly he wasn't fully himself or fully feeling right in that second half.
Yeah, because I think at one point in the broadcast, they had a comparison from his first half and his second half. And I think he was down to like maybe 3-4 yards a carry in the second half.
I mean, that's still insane production. You know, if you had a running back who was reliably picking up 3-4 yards a carry, that's really all you need from a running back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as long as they're moving the chains or, you know, making sure that you're not throwing on 3rd and 10 or more than that.
Exactly, yeah. But no, I mean, really, really puzzling. And as you said, there was sort of, to me, it seems like a defensive line problem because it really was a case of space being made up front. These weren't wheel routes and things like that that we were losing out to. These were runs up the middle. These were halfback dives, you know.
I don't know if you've seen, but have you had a chance of looking at the Pro Football Focus grades of the run defense? It wasn't pretty to look at.
Was it right down at the bottom by any chance?
We had a couple of guys in the 40s, some were even in the 20s in their grading scheme.
That's pretty difficult. I mean, Pro Football Focus, we always wonder how much store we can really set by that. But I mean, yeah, it definitely wasn't pretty to watch either. And I would argue that that's probably the key thing that helped Minnesota get the foothold that they got. Obviously, their score was, a big pass play, their first score as well. But realistically, I think that that was down to, you know, our defense almost being on the back foot from that first play, which was a run play as well.
As you mentioned, the touchdown, that was just a busted coverage, it looked like, because Byron Murphy thought he might have had help over the top, but clearly he didn't.
I think it was busted coverage, but I think for me, and I'm happy to be corrected on this because I've not had a chance to look at the full replay yet, but to me it looked like the defense was almost in shock at being run on that easily after play one, and then play two comes in and nobody has time to get set. They don't have a good chance to get an easy read on the offense, and that's why the coverage was broken, you know.
Another thing that wasn't really good either was the pass rush, because, you know, last week they dominated against Tannehill and managed to sack him 6 times, but this week the hardly athletically gifted Kirk Cousins only ate turf 1 time in the game, and that came from Marcus Golden.
Did that get counted as a full Marcus Golden sack, or was it half Golden and half Chandler Jones?
I've not seen if they've updated it, but I know, like, after the game, it was down just as a Marcus Golden sack, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, I'm assuming they've just given it to him, but it looked like a half and half one to me.
I mean, I've not actually updated the thingy what I did last week, the chart. I've not been able to update that yet, so I'll have to have a look and then post a week to update as soon as possible.
I mean, either way, as you said, you know, we got 6 times in one game last week, and then you come into this one, and there really was no pressure on the QB. In fact, it led Kirk Cousins to be one of the highest rated passers in the league, on that, you know, for week two at least.
Yeah, I mean, he isn't a bad quarterback, but...
No, he's definitely not. He's definitely not, but he's a middling quarterback, I would say.
I did hear on the Dave Pasch podcast, he had Scott Hansen on the other week, and they were talking about the Minnesota game coming up. And I think it was Scott who came out with a really interesting comparison for Kirk Cousins. It was basically saying, like, you can win with Kirk Cousins, but you're not going to win because of Kirk Cousins. If you get what that means.
I think that's a really, really good way of saying it. But and I think you could argue as well that Kirk Cousins wasn't really the difference maker for the Vikings in this game anyway. The thing that made the difference for them was good defense. It was an excellently established run game, and it was having, you know, 3 or 4 good receivers who, you know, given the amount of time that they had time to make space, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, it wasn't like Phelan and Jefferson, like, had huge games against them. I mean, they had, like, some decent catches and a couple of touchdowns between them, but it's not like they dominated the game. It was definitely more Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that for sure. But obviously, you know, when we're talking about specifically our pass rush defense, that's all a symptom of it, right? Because basically what we're doing is giving Kirk Cousins an absolute edge in the pocket to just do what he wanted, you know. And I do think that additionally, like, this, you can't have a good pass rush and a bad run defense, because once they've established that run, you can't be bringing the full blitz all the time, because you're going to mess out assignments. And I do think that that's going to be part of why the pass rush was so poor. But even then, you know, we've got such a tall defensive line. I would be expecting maybe like some balls batted at the line or just a bit more pressure on him. But it really seemed as though there wasn't much pressure at all.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And hopefully before we move on to the next point, like, the Minnesota offensive line, I don't think that's anywhere near one of the best in the league yet. They just seem to play like it.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's the names in the offensive line. Nobody pops out to me as particularly big Pro Bowl guys or anything like that. So it's not, you can't say that was the main reason behind it.
Yeah, because I mean, like, obviously they drafted a left tackle in the draft pack that's just gone, but he's not played any yet. So obviously he wasn't part of it. And I think they made their right tackle, I think it's Brian O'Neill. He was made one of the highest paid right tackles recently. So besides them two, I don't really know who there is really on that line.
I think it really must be down to the defense being on the back foot against that run. I think that, I mean, I've got nothing to really back this up, but I do get the feeling that they just came into the game not expecting there to be such a, you know, strong run against them, and they, and it just put them on the back foot for the whole game.
I think another thing which puts you on the back foot is when penalties come in, because again, this was a weird one, you know, early doors, there were that many, and they were just like out of nowhere seemed to stop getting them.
It was odd, wasn't it? I almost get the feeling that the officials were going to call a tough game, and then they had a little conference and they were just like, should we just let them play? You know, did you get the feeling as well? Because I do think that a lot of the early penalties were marginal, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the game was overrun with penalties, was it, on either side? Well, I mean, we didn't really expect that happening because the referee crew was one of the, I think they were the last penalised teams, like officiating staffs last year, so wouldn't be expecting that to be the case.
I wonder if that could be part of it. Do you think it was like the team sort of going like, well, you know, this, they're the least penalising officials, we can kind of get away with something here, maybe we should try it. They try it, it doesn't go out well, and then they just give up. But, I mean, realistically, you just shouldn't be committing penalties anyway, should you?
As well, it was one of those typical Cardinals penalties as well, because they get a false start, followed by burning an early timeout.
Yeah.
And then the very next play, out of the timeout, they get another false start penalty.
Yep, that's the pattern that we've seen quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but, you know, it happens way too often for the Cardinals.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was also, did we not get like an unsportsmanlike, did we get one of the taunting penalties, or am I?
No, I don't think we've had one of them so far this season.
Yeah. We got a stupid penalty, I think, in the third quarter, and I'm totally blanking on what it was now, to be
honest. It was roughing the punter, wasn't it?
Oh, we had that one, but no, there was a different one as well. That roughing one, I mean, I get it. It's like the rule is just don't make contact with the plant, like, you know, but that felt like a tough one.
Definitely one of those which you don't really want to see, because, you know, the defense has worked that hard to get the ball back. You only need to see it flitter away because some guy can't control himself.
I do think it's a shame. I mean, like that penalty in particular was, I don't think it was anybody's fault, you know, and I think it's just these things happen. Although I do occasionally look at those ones and I think, is it really worth having that much effort and that much risk to try and block a punt, which like rarely happens? Would it not almost be better to have, you know, four guys back and have a really good block set up in case you get a good return?
Should we move on to our final negative rather, before we actually get to the good part?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, well, the last one is the picks thrown by Kyler Murray. Obviously, you know, we shouldn't really dwell on this too much because he's also really the main reason, again, that we put up so many points.
I think it's worth mentioning, though. It's definitely worth like a short discussion at least, because I got to say the two picks were maybe like some of the more egregious ones that we've ever seen from Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he just seemed to maybe put too much on the passes. Especially the one that turned into a pick six. That just seemed, he could have just ran that maybe for a few more yards.
Yeah, I get the feeling with the pick six one that he was kind of like, he was trying really, really hard to make something, to make anything happen, you know? And that's kind of just, it led to heartbreak almost.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you don't want him to stop doing that because, you know, we know he's capable of making these big plays, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which obviously we're going to talk about in a bit more because, you know, positive section's coming up.
No, you are right, though. Like, we know he's capable of making those big plays, and I think I would rather he was not shy about, you know, trying it, at least.
The deep shots are there because, you know, you've got guys like DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, they can both go up for the ball if it's, like, a one-on-one situation. But when he's, like, throwing the ball and there's, like, a safety just waiting there for it, you know, you think, what are you looking at, Kyler?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, as well, the you know, in particular with the pick six, safety followed his eyes. You know, this is like classic quarterback mistake, right? You know, this is the sort of thing that defensive backs live for. It's like, I can see his eyes, I can see where he's looking, I know where the ball's going. And he just ran, you know, between the receiver and the ball. And I do think when it comes to something like that, it's tricky. But I mean, to me, that's fully on Kyler. There was no problem with the O-line there. There was no blown coverage. There was no blown route. It was just, he should have seen that.
I think on the second one, there was a case for him to have been hit in the helmet.
Right in the face, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, obviously that might have put his finger off a little bit, but obviously the refs didn't see it. Not much you can do about that.
I do think it's a shame with something where, you know, like a lot of these rules that are specifically for safety, I do think should be reviewable. But also, you know, you want the flow of the game to be there, right?
Should we move on to the positives?
I think we should, yeah.
We spent enough time dwelling on the negative, put it that way. Especially in a game which we ended up winning.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there's plenty of positives. Like, this is a game that we lost a lot of points in, but we still came out with the win. And we also, you know, because of that, by that same logic, we scored a lot.
And I was going to say, we'll kick off with one of my favourite stats that I've came across for this game. Before today's game, or rather Sunday's game, because, you know, it isn't today. Teams with a pick six, 3+ passing touchdowns, and 175+ rushing yards were 78-1.
Yeah, so that's a win rate of 98.7%.
And the Cardinals, obviously, they managed to win despite that. So now that record stands at 78-2.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? I mean, I do think, you know, the game that the Vikings played against us in many ways was a game that they deserved to win. I think that there's a lot of things the Cardinals did wrong, but I think the Cardinals also deserved the win in the end. But you got to say that the Vikings were unfortunate to not come out with that win, right? And that's a positive for us because, you know, a win is a win and it doesn't matter how you get it. And honestly, you don't win championships without at least a bit of luck on your side, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've had plenty of times where we've been on the opposite side of this sort of outcome.
Yeah, actually, I did some light research on it and I've not managed to confirm this for sure. But I did find that between 1999 and the ongoing 2021 season, it looks like the Cardinals are the single team that has lost the most games by 1 point.
That's mental.
And it's like a lot, you know, as other teams that I was looking at, this all happened because I was like, I wonder how many times this has happened to the Vikings. And again, since 1999, it's happened to them like 7 times. And of those 7 times, 4 of them have been from the NFC West, with obviously 2 of them coming from the Cardinals, which is quite funny. So, yeah, so bear in mind that the Vikings have had it 7 times. The Cardinals have had it something like 12. Won a lot by 1 point as well, by the way. The cardiac cards is a true thing.
Definitely some sort of mathematical backup for all that sort of cardiac card stuff. Even though we live through it all every single week, almost.
I was going to say, it's like, it's mathematical proof of the thing that we all know as Cardinals fans, right?
I think obviously the biggest one is the offensive comeback. Obviously, it's only the second game of the season, but we're quickly running out of superlatives to describe Baby Yoda.
Yeah, I mean, a guy with, more than 300 yards passing, 4 total touchdowns. What an incredible performance from Kyler Murray, and in fact, a really, really good passer rating as well, from what I remember.
Yeah, I mean, like, it would have been a lot better had it not been for those 2 interceptions. Yeah, he's the first quarterback in NFL history to ever begin the season with 3+ passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown in his first 2 games of the season.
That's pretty wild, really, isn't it? I mean, we've talked about it before, all these records that he breaks with the rushing included, because it's like so much more part of the modern game than it was even, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. But the fact that, you know, like, he's got the company of that with, like, you know, Lamar Jackson and Cam Newton and like all these other guys that came in, and Russell Wilson to an extent, and he's still breaking the records. I mean, that's impressive company to be in.
Yeah, even more impressive is the next one, because it was his second game with 400+ passing yards, with 3 passing touchdowns and 1 rushing touchdown. And the only other quarterbacks in NFL history to have that on their resume are Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning, who've also done it twice.
It's amazing to me that there are still people out there, Cardinals fans included, which is even more perplexing, there are still people out there who get shocked every time they watch Kyler Murray like come on and play and sort of seem to only just realize that he is one of the elite QBs of the league.
And I mean, another really, probably the most important stat is that he's now the franchise record holder for rushing touchdowns, surpassing Jim Hart's 16 in 165 less games.
Yet another franchise record broken on Sunday. I'm sure we'll get to the other one, but he was always going to break that record, I think, you know, given his style of play and given how much more prevalent that is. But what a rabbit in the hat that is.
It is a bit disappointing, though, that for these two performances he's had this season, he still hasn't won a British Birdgang Breakdown Player of the Game award.
That's true, actually, yeah.
He did win the Nickelodeon MVP this past week, though.
Again?
No, I mean, for his week one performance, obviously.
Week one. I was going to say, I know he won on week one, but I didn't think he'd won on week two.
Definitely got a chance of doing it.
Do you think they'll slime him at the end of the year if he wins enough?
I just hope we have a playoff game on there.
What a season he's putting together, and let's hope he can remain healthy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he can't do it without weapons, and he's clearly got that in both Rondale Moore and AJ Green, both of who caught their first touchdown passes for their new team.
What a game for Rondale Moore to come out and show what he's made of, right?
One of them was more exciting than the other because, you know, 77 yards from Rondale Moore after, I mean, obviously more magic from Kyler Murray just to get out of the sack.
Absolutely. But like, let's not put that against Rondale Moore as well, because he was out there, you know, the whole time Kyler was bouncing about in the backfield like a maniac. Rondale Moore's out there getting himself into space. He's broken his coverage. He's got away and that's able to make that play, you know. What an exciting pass that was.
I mean, they had a really good game in total. I think he had 8 catches for over 100 yards. That did earn him the British Birdgang Breakdown Player of the Game.
I would definitely say that, given it's a breakout game as well, he's the British Birdgang Breakdown Breakout Player of the Game.
I mean, it was only by 1%, though. He got 31% of the vote compared to Kyler Murray's 30%. So we nearly managed to get one.
It's close. I mean, I think that this, the offense at least, all probably are going to be in with a shout for votes in this game, you know, because it is, there was no one guy for the whole offense to, you know, really say like, yes, that was the guy who made the difference. And actually, you know, you were mentioning AJ Green there as well, and it was nice to see him in getting a touchdown as well.
Yeah, he had a nice dive into the end zone, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I think it was the commentators that said it on the broadcast. It might have even been Aqib Talib, actually, that said it, which, by the way, I really enjoyed his coverage. Anytime they get ex-players in, or like more recent ex-players in, I really enjoy what their analysis is. It's very insightful. But he was talking about AJ Green and, you know, the changing of the guard, I guess, to his new position, where he was going from being, you know, wide receiver number one to one of the guys who isn't that. And it definitely seemed to suit him well, because he did get a brace of good catches and a really good touchdown as well.
Yeah, and you were mentioning Aqib Talib. We've actually got him on the commentary again this weekend, along with Gus Johnson.
That'll be fun as well, because that'll give him chance to be even more, you know, get more into it, be more relaxed. And because he knows the team as well, he might have even more insights.
Yeah, I think we also need to credit Max with another ex-Williams, with 7 catches for 94 yards, both of which were career highs.
I was going to say, he got a game ball for that. I remember checking that out in the Cliff Kingsbury game ball speech after the game. Yeah, just, it's funny. It's one of those things where it's like, hang on a minute, is that going to Max Williams again? What? It's another pass to Max Williams, because we're so used to the Cardinals almost just ignoring tight ends, right?
Yeah, and then he almost came close to becoming the first Cardinals tight end to have 100 plus yards in God knows how long. Didn't think we've had one this millennium.
It's been, you know, not something that I would know for sure, but definitely the most I've seen the use of a tight end in a game probably since I've been watching, so at least 10, 12 years, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a strange one that we don't seem to use tight ends, but obviously we never seem to have a decent one, do we? We just have, like, run-of-the-mill guys who just are there.
Yeah, and I would say as well, like as a pure positive, this is a big, you know, career advancement for Max with another ex Williams, because he last year was being targeted a few times and dropping them. Be solid. I think he caught every ball that came to him, right?
I'm not sure on that, and probably sounds about right, because he did make a lot of catches in the game.
Yeah. I don't remember him specifically making a drop. I remember a few dropped balls, but not one specifically from Max. I feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but that's nice career advancement. And maybe, you know, that kind of demonstration and the showing that he has a safe pair of hands. Plus, I don't know if you'd noticed it specifically, but like seeing him, you know, be able to catch the football and the yards after catch that he was getting, because he was just, you know, he is just this big guy. And if you're trying to make an open field tackle on a guy that size and you're like a little corner or safety, it's going to take you longer to bring him down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if he falls forward, you know, if he falls forward, that's another like 2 yards on top of it.
I think as well, one positive we should take out of this is the fact that the defense managed to figure things out in the second half.
That's a great way to say it. You know, like we talked about the offensive comeback, and realistically, we had a bit of a defensive comeback as well.
Yeah, obviously, maybe as we mentioned before, the injuries to Dalvin Cook maybe started mounting up and lessened his effectiveness.
Which you never like to see. You know, I would much rather have it been that the defense was like, oh, so that's what we were doing wrong, and being able to start plugging those gaps. But maybe it was that those injuries were starting to get to him. I wouldn't be surprised, because he didn't look like a happy camper. You know, regardless, one way or another, you know, they started to slow down that run. And when the run started to slow down, they looked a hell of a lot more comfortable.
A good job by Vance Joseph with the adjustments at halftime, we can say.
I think it was it JJ Watt that called out Vance Joseph as like one of the guys who is the reason for the win? After the game, sort of saying like his adjustments and his calls and stuff is what you know helped them make the stops they needed to make.
Obviously the start to the game didn't help him, but you know, he seems to be able to change things around at halftime and make it better in the second half,
which is almost just as important a skill, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, because obviously sometimes they're going to put out things they've not done before on the...
It's all well and good turning up as prepared as possible, but you need to be able to, I would say it's more important to be able to adapt on the fly when they do decide to change something up. And clearly he did. You know, I think overall you got to talk about it being good settling. I would kind of describe it as, I think that the whole defense managed to, you know, get out of the flap that they were in, settle down, and then get to work. And they did it through some pretty tricky circumstances as well. We talked about, for instance, the penalty that came back for roughing the kicker. That was rough on them. They spent a long time on the field when they were on the field. And not only that, but our offense was getting off the field relatively quickly. So you could see that the defense were gassed partway through the third quarter.
I think one of the other positives from this game is the performance of Matthew Philip Prater.
You want to talk about polar opposite of last year?
I know exactly. Imagine seeing Gonzalez trying a 62-yard field goal. It might end up like 62 yards wide of the bloody goals.
So 62 yards, obviously franchise record, only 2 yards off of his franchise record as well. Off of his NFL record.
Yeah, I was going to say, because one of the craziest stats I've seen about this is, though, that Matt Prater owns the longest field goal for 3 different franchises.
Yeah, it's wild. I saw this one as well. And you know, the fact that one of them is shorter than that as well, it's pretty good.
I mean, it is good to have a good, reliable kicker, which we'll talk about in a bit, because obviously, thankfully, our opponents did not have one.
Yeah, but yeah, Matthew Prater now owns the Cardinals' 62-yard record, the Lions' 59-yard record, and the Broncos' 64-yard, which is also the NFL record. So, I mean, I wouldn't, like, I think as well, I saw a stat that he is like 75% on kicks over 50 yards.
Yeah, he's got a ridiculous leg on him. And also they were saying in pre-game, he was hitting them from nearly 70, so he could even go further for us.
I have heard that's a big thing with kickers, is like, you know, when they're warming up and there's no pressure or whatever, they can pretty much be hitting between the posts from anywhere on the field. You know, they can just do that. But obviously, you know, when it comes down to the pressure on their shoulders as well, and clearly Prater's got the goods, you know, a 62-yard field goal when we won by 1 point means that that was instrumental in getting us the win.
Yep, our penultimate positive is the Pihunian, as we called it.
Yeah, indeed. The much lauded thing that ended up not getting much airtime at all, actually.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of mentions from Aqib Talib because he came out with something along the lines of Patrick Peterson had said to him that he had a dream, that he had a pick and returned it for a touchdown against us.
Yeah, well, that didn't quite happen, did it?
No, because in this one, he allowed 4 catches for 98 yards and 2 touchdowns, giving Kyler Murray the perfect 158.3 passer rating when throwing the ball in his direction.
It pretty much couldn't have gone any better for the Cardinals at all, could it?
Obviously, we started targeting DeAndre Hopkins, and maybe Patrick Peterson moved over to that side with some safety help, you know, to maybe lessen Hopkins' effectiveness.
I think wasn't Patrick Peterson also the guy who blew the coverage on Rondale Moore for the touchdown?
I think he did, yeah. That's one of the ones credited to him. And also Hopkins' touchdown, he turned him inside out and left him like 4 or 5 yards behind him.
So here's the thing, right, is, you know, for all the bluster and all of that stuff, isn't this pretty much exactly what all the Cardinals fans thought was going to happen? You know, not so much knew it was going to happen or whatever, but like, given the way that his standard of play had really, really fallen, probably specifically the last 2 years in Arizona, pretty much since he came back from the PED suspension that he had, this is pretty much exactly what we all thought would happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have had him coming back, but, you know, he seems to have lost a step. And he's not the cornerback that he used to be, you know.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's a bad cornerback. I still think he's probably among the best in the NFL. But he seemed to, you know, be acting in a way that suggested that he was still the single best cornerback in the whole NFL. And that's just absolutely not true anymore.
He's not going to come back. And obviously burnt a lot of bridges with the fan base with his comments. And
yeah, it really did.
Everyone seems to enjoy him falling now. So, you know,
yeah, I didn't hear too many boos from him, at least on the broadcast.
Yeah, they might have like lowered the microphones for that, I wonder.
I think it's also the sort of thing that the booing would have taken place in a time when we were probably in the commercial break or like cut back to the studio or something like that.
Or when he runs out with the team or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But still, I mean, I think ultimately what's going to happen here is that the Cardinals are going to move on and not really think about him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He's in the rear view mirror now. We're not going to see him again. We won't even see him in the playoffs, I don't think, with how they've started.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. But there he goes. You know, like that was his dream of the pick six. And yet he gives up 2 touchdowns for nearly 100 yards. All that drama for nothing, I guess.
And last but not least in the positives is Zane Gonzalez in disguise, maybe.
Yeah, this was the parallels with this and our game against Atlanta last year that we lost with the kick in the last minute. That's not escaped everyone else, right?
Yeah, because I mean, like, obviously, like us, rather unlike us, I think, because we didn't try to move the ball closer, did we? We just thought we'll settle for a field goal here and that should be good enough.
Yeah.
Which makes this even worse because they kept playing, getting the ball closer to the post and then end up missing anyway.
Yep, they really stuck it out. And on top of that, left themselves 0 time on the clock as well to even try an onside kick or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things as well because he did miss an extra point in the game, hence the 1 point differential.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the ultimate kicker. I mean, I think you know, him not making this field goal to win it is one thing, but missing the extra point as well. And actually, you know, the kick that he missed, it was a bit more of a chip shot. You know, it wasn't a gimme, but it wasn't a hard field goal to hit either.
Did you hear the Vikings radio broadcast of it?
The one with "it is good" Oh no, it's not good. That one.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, love that. That was excellent.
I think I love it even more than seeing Adam Phelan's child crying.
Oh god, that video was so funny. I don't mean that just in a like sadistic way of a child crying, but more just like it was very much like exactly how you'd expect a toddler to take that moment.
You know, Vikings fans, so you know they're learning disappointment from a young age.
Yeah, exactly. I do think my favorite version of that though is the it's like some cell phone footage from behind the goalposts at State Farm Stadium, and somebody watches it and they're panning shot and they can see the ball go wide right, and the shot ends up panning down to a Vikings fan who is not even facing the goalposts but is celebrating, pointing at all the Cardinals fans thinking that they've just won the game. And that's a beautiful moment to me.
Probably standing there goading the fans, you know, like, oh, we're going to win, you're losers and all that. And then like, he's lucky he was in Arizona, because if he was in somewhere like Los Angeles or Pittsburgh, he'd probably get the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, there's definitely some less mild-mannered fans. Actually, before we finish up on talking about this game, and I know we like to finish on the positives, and this isn't really a negative, but it's more of a question that I had for both yourself, Tom, and anybody who's listening and might know. Do you think the Cardinals have a really, really poor home field advantage when it comes to the number of fans of opposing teams that we let in?
I do think we have a lot of season ticket holders who just have tickets, you know, just to try and make some money off them.
Mm.
You know, they'll sell them just to the highest bidder, whether that's a visiting fan or not.
Because I definitely, like, it's something I've noted for a few seasons at least, and hopefully, you know, with it, once the Cardinals start performing better this season and look more legit, then there'll be more Cardinals fans taking those seats. But you know, I think it was especially noticeable in this game because the purple stands out really well among the reds, and you know, the fact that there were these people, you know, standing there giving it the skull clap. And it looked like in certain sections of the stadium it was almost 50-50. And I do wonder, you know, how much of a home field advantage comparatively do the Cardinals get? You know, when you consider something like the Seahawks, their 12th man, you know, thing where opposing offenses can barely get a word in edgeways, and yet you've got, you know, the Cardinals stadium, and it's like, okay. The away support is just as loud as the home support.
Yeah, and the away support manages to get the offense to full start more times than they should.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there is one more positive before we do move on, though, to the next bit, which isn't positive at all.
Go on, the fact
that the Cardinals are now 2-0, meaning that Cliff Kingsbury has gone 2-0 in back-to-back years.
Nice.
Making him only the fourth head coach in franchise history to ever manage that feat, joining Bruce Arians, Don Coryell, and Arnie Horween. He was around in the 1920s, 30s.
Nice. I mean, going 2-0, it's a nice feeling, to be honest.
It's a shame the season's not two games long.
There's also a really, you know how it usually takes about 6 weeks for the real undefeated teams to be shaken out. There's actually, I think, only like 7 or maybe 8 undefeated teams still in the league.
I mean, definitely, like, obviously the NFC West before this week was undefeated. And then Seattle decided to lose. So now it's just like 3 2-0 teams and them losers at 1-1.
It is wild, again, like, that we're in this division, which, you know, there's so many other divisions that we would be top of, especially with the points for that we have. You know, we're in the NFC West, and so we have to be third.
Although I don't understand why, because, you know, it's probably just points, isn't it, or something like that at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's specifically point differential is the thing that's used for that. So the fact that we only got +1 on Sunday means that we, you know, on average have scored fewer points more, which is, you know, it is what it is. And obviously it's way too early in the season to really be counting that as anything anyway.
Exactly. Wait till week 4 when the division games happen. You know, then we might see some movement in that area.
Well, we will. We will have to.
And now we'll move on to some fantasy football, as much as it pains me to do so, but we must.
At least we've got a game between the two of us to talk about briefly.
yeah, I mean, obviously I'd rather we didn't do that, but, you know, we still will, because my terrible starts in fantasy football continued this week, losing again to fall to 0-2 in both leagues. You know, both heavy losses owing much to Derrick Henry returning to the beastly form of last year and the year before that. So cheers, Seattle, for doing nothing.
Yeah, funny that the Cardinals hold him to almost nothing, and then you just get absolutely destroyed in week two. But
yeah, so in the Bird Gang Bowl, I was trailing by 20 with Conrad still having two players to play on Monday Night Football. I only managed to muster 122.4 points with Austin Eckler, Mike Evans, and CD Lamb delivering the goods, but no one else could be asked.
I ended up with a loss as well in the Bird Gang Bowl. I scored a reasonably respectable 150.72 points, but Stuart's PS, I Love Pew, outscored me by another 12 points, again with a Monday Night Football spectacular. But this time, especially with starring player Aaron Jones absolutely coming through for him.
How many points did he score in the end?
41.5.
You know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's like a bit, basically a quarter, you know, it's like a quarter of all the points just coming in one player in one game. But such is life. Meanwhile, we can talk about a game that I actually won, being the Dynasty League game. Which puts me at a record of 500 for that league this year. And having beat you, not by the best margin, but it's a win is a win.
Yeah, I mean, it's never a good sign for me as well when Brandon Cooks is my top scorer and I leave massive points from Henry Ruggs on the bench, who, despite actually drafting him last year in the first round, I don't think I've ever actually started him. And this week I should have done.
Yeah. How many points did he have on the bench?
I think he had 25, so, you know, obviously it wouldn't have made a difference when your team puts up 196 and mine gets like 150, but, you know, it is.
It's funny how fortunes change, though, because my team hasn't changed a huge amount, or at least that starting team hasn't changed a huge amount since last year, and they were regularly putting up over 200 last year, and this year I'm struggling for it a little bit, but such is fantasy football, unfortunately.
And you say you're struggling, I'm 0-2 again, with, you know, I'm surely not heading for back-to-back number one picks, am I?
Get your wooden spoons out. Did you give yourself a proper wooden spoon this year, or last year?
Yeah, I've got the wooden spoon hiding away in shame somewhere.
Nice. I won a wooden spoon at a golf tournament relatively recently, and I've been using it to make chili with. So
at least that one has uses. I don't think mine would be able to be used in that sort of way. Sadly.
Oh, did you get one of the trophy ones?
I did, yeah. It wasn't like an actual wooden spoon. Got too many of them in the kitchen.
No, they gave me an actual wooden spoon and a towel for, you know, like the little towel you get to clean your golf clubs up.
Yes. Not that I play golf, but you know, I understand.
I don't think you need a towel for any fantasy football stuff, though, unless it's like wicking the sweat up from watching your results come in.
There is one place where I am doing pretty well this year, and that's the weekly pick'ems, where this past weekend I went 12-4.
That's pretty good going, actually. It's so hard to keep track without the official weekly pick'em thing.
Yeah, I mean, we do have the Pick Watch League, but I think so far, I think there's only like 5 or 6 people still bothering with it. So, you know, if I take that win by default, I don't care.
Well, I mean, week three has a few more guaranteed ones. And I do think once you start getting into like week three of the league, that starts to be the time when you can make more informed predictions, more informed decisions, I guess.
Yeah. So starting off week three, we've got Carolina against Houston.
This is one of the more tricky ones for me because I have seen flashes from Houston, but I would still have to pick Carolina over them at the moment because Houston is definitely, as I said, they're flashes, but they're not putting it all together when they need to be.
So what you're saying is Houston has a problem?
Yes, I am saying that Houston has a problem.
I'm going with Carolina in this one just because I think Tyrod Taylor's out for the Houston, so they're left with some guy called Davis. So, you know, less said about that, the better.
I'm almost surprised they're not bringing, like, Brock Osweiler back or something like that.
I mean, they do have Deshaun Watson just rotting away there, you know. Maybe they could use him.
I do think there's a reason that they've got him on the bench, though.
True, true. But, you know, it is what it is. Washington against Buffalo.
This is one where I have to go with form. I'm going with Buffalo here, but I do think that Washington has it in them to put an upset on this one.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Heinicke at quarterback, you know, he's not terrible, but
no,
with the way Buffalo played this past weekend, you know, I think maybe they're back after their disappointing week one. So, yeah, I'm going with Buffalo as well.
Then we've got Chicago and Cleveland. Do we know yet who Chicago are starting? Is Andy Dalton alive?
I mean, I'm sure many are wishing he wasn't, but, you know, if he's healthy, then they're probably going to start him, aren't they, sadly?
Justin Fields wasn't exactly the magic bullet they were looking for last Sunday when he was in. At least he looked more exciting. I don't know. Part of me would love to see Chicago come away from this one, but I don't think you can argue too much against Cleveland here.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking Cleveland in this one.
Baltimore and Detroit.
Yeah, I think this one's an easy one. Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah. I it's funny because I definitely, there was a few people I know who were all in on the train of, yeah, Detroit's going to beat Green Bay on Monday, but that didn't exactly materialize.
They didn't even cover the plus 12 what they had, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. To be fair, Aaron Rodgers looked a bit more like his old self, but there you go.
Indianapolis versus Tennessee. This one could be a tough one to choose.
I think personally I'm going with Tennessee here based on the fact that I've seen them play in two games now and I've seen them play really well. Indianapolis, I've heard have done well, but I've actually not personally seen them. So, you know, I'm just going with personal experience, I guess.
I'm starting with Indianapolis in this one just because I think they've got the defensive line to cause Derrick Henry problems. And watch as he goes for 200 now.
That's fair. I think if they can stop, well, we kind of demonstrated if you can stop Henry, you stop that whole offense, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it could be an upset, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know which one's favored yet in this one. It could be a close one.
I miss the old NFL Pick'em things because I quite like to see where the popular vote was going with these.
Yeah. Just bring it back, NFL. You know, it's not difficult. Don't care if it's week three.
Honestly, no. Especially given I was so close to winning an Xbox last year, but there you go. We got Chargers in Kansas City. I know which one my fantasy football team would like to work out, but I do think that Kansas City maybe is the better team here.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers are a pretty good team at the moment, but I think just Kansas City are that little bit better.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Kansas City are almost in a league of their own really this year, as they have been for a few years. And I don't think the Chargers, I think that the way that the Chargers would have to beat Kansas City would be as a shootout. And I just don't think they're quite good enough to do that.
New Orleans against New England.
Rebuild versus rebuild. You got a particular preference on that one?
I mean, I did see probably about half an hour ago, maybe an hour, the New Orleans stadium was on fire.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was smoke coming from the roof of the Silver Dome.
Is it not the Superdome?
Oh, whatever you call it.
Apparently it's not too bad, but don't look great.
I mean, I don't think it'll stop them from playing football on Sunday.
No, it looks like the fire's now out. So there's your live breaking news that the fire on the roof of the Superdome is out, as far as I can tell.
People will probably listen to 24 hours later.
Yeah, the fire's been out for ages. I think I'm going to go with New Orleans here. I feel like this is one of the coin tossy games.
Yeah, I'm taking New England in this one, just because I think the way they're playing with Mac Jones, you know, they're looking decent. Yeah. Their defense is good as always. And they're playing Jameis Winston. Who knows what you're going to get from him?
That's true. Yeah, Jameis Winston, it's either going to be a really good game or about four picks. The New England managed to get their share of picks against the Jets last week.
I mean, it does help when Zach Wilson throws them right at them.
Yeah, that was some pretty grim watching, actually. But anyway, on to the other New York team. We got Atlanta and New York Giants.
I'm just taking Atlanta because I can't bring myself to choosing the Giants.
As I've said before, I'm not picking any New York team until further notice, until they give me a reason to.
Cincinnati versus Pittsburgh.
What have we seen from Cincinnati so far this year?
I mean, the first week they looked all right, but last week they just looked terrible.
Who did they have last week again?
I should know because I had a few in fantasy, but no, it wasn't. They lost to the Bears.
Oh, what am I looking at then? Oh, that's in the preseason. There we go. Yeah, Bears. That, of course, Justin Fields. I think I was too busy watching that game and thinking about the whether or not Andy Dalton was taking dives or not.
I think we know where we're going with the New York Jets against the Denver Broncos, so both of us are the Broncos.
Absolutely. Miami versus the Raiders, though.
Yeah, this is a tough one because I think maybe Tua's injured and possibly Derek Carr's injured as well, so it could be a backup game.
Yeah, which is a shame because I did see today that Derek Carr is currently the leading passer in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't play, that'll help Kyler Murray in his quest to be the best passer.
I'm going to go with, like, I haven't heard, like, for sure that Derek Carr's out, and I don't think he missed much playing time on Sunday. So I'm going to go with the Raiders at the moment in the hopes that he will be okay.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Raiders as well, which seems weird because they're another team I never really picked that much.
Next up, we have Tom Brady at the Rams.
The Rams' biggest test so far this season, maybe.
I think I'm going to go with the Rams here, you know. I know, like, it seems like a bad move picking against Tampa Bay, but and they have been playing extremely well, don't get me wrong. Rams' defensive line is still excellent. Sam Bradford has been playing some really, really strong games.
Matt Stafford.
And Matt Stafford.
Sam Bradford. What year is this?
I no idea where that came from. Excuse me. Matt Stafford has been playing some really good games. I'm just imagining him there now. Anyway, Matt Stafford has been doing really well with the Rams. They've got a good O-line. They've got good weapons. And I think that this is their showcase. You know, this is their chance as a team to stand up and tell the world that they're legit. And I think they're going to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one to call, but I'm going with Tampa Bay on this one. Just because I want to see the Rams lose some games.
That's fair. I think that would be a good thing to see. And speaking of divisional games and divisional rivals losing games, Seattle are one place behind us on the wheel, and so they have Minnesota next.
Yeah, I'm taking Minnesota in this one, just because seeing what Derrick Henry did to Seattle just makes you wonder what Dalvin Cook could do, provided he's still walking at that point.
Yeah, I mean, if the pattern holds, you got to go with it, right? Like, we beat the Titans. The Titans beat Seattle, Minnesota, but by a small margin. I have a feeling that they're going to do that. I also think that of all the teams, Minnesota are the least flattered by their record at the moment, if that makes sense. Like, they're the least deserving of the 0-2. And they probably want to play well and get a win.
Our penultimate game this week is Green Bay against San Francisco.
Tricky one for me. Frisco, I think, could be, you know, they've obviously played well so far this season, but it's a team that I know that can turn up in two different fashions. And Green Bay, obviously, are the epitome of that this season. So I think I'm going to go with Green Bay in the hopes that it's the Green Bay that showed up against Detroit.
Matt, obviously, in the document, you can see I've picked San Francisco, but I'm changing my mind.
You're going to go with Green Bay there? Yeah.
Just to make sure the Cardinals are the only team above, well, the team that 3-0 in the NFC West. Spoiler alert.
That would rule. Final game would be Philly at Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, this is another tough one as well because just of how well Philadelphia are playing so far this season.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? And I think the hard part with that as well is that Dallas look pretty legit, you know? Yeah, and I mean, I don't think they've managed to pick up any major injuries yet.
No, not just yet, but I mean, they did lose Michael Gallup before the season, but, you know, they seem to be able to... Actually, no, I think Amari Cooper might be a bit nicked up. Something with a rib injury.
In that case, I'm going to go with Philly.
I'm going to stick with Dallas for this prediction.
That's fair. I think, like, both of them are teams that I would put on relatively even pegging, and I'd put them both on pegging to be going into the postseason.
And for the final act of this week's episode, we've got the game preview for our week 3 game, where we're at the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The 2-0 Cardinals going to the 0-2 Jaguars.
Or Jaguars, if you're American.
Jaguars, indeed. Where do you even start with them at the moment? A team with a lot of drama right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're a weird one because, obviously, like, as we say, it's a 6 p.m. start, so sorry, Scott Hansen, you're going to have too few viewers this weekend.
Such a shame. I do love my 6 p.m. red zone, but, you know, I also quite like getting to bed early, so there's that.
Yeah, you're not the only one, especially with early morning Monday starts.
Yeah.
Not the one.
Well, I mean, luckily our first 6 p.m. start of the season didn't have the Cardinals' usual 6 p.m. curse, and theoretically, with the way that the Jaguars have been playing in general, we should be favourites for this. I think we'll be odds-on favourites by a while.
Yeah, I think already in the spread we're like 6-point favourites, so that's something.
I feel like 6 points isn't that much. You know, I feel like we could cover that spread quite easily. Rare situation where the Cardinals actually lead the series overall as well, with the Jags being a relatively recent expansion team. That is a 3-2 series. So one of the very few that we lead and probably have a chance at actually maintaining that lead. So I think this is what you might call a must win in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, we have won the last 3 games when we've played against the Jaguars.
And we've won them by reasonable margins as well. It was like 37-17, 27-14, 27-24.
I mean, the last one's probably maybe not.
That's a less good margin, but, you know, before that,
I think if I remember rightly, that final one was one where we had like a really slow start and they got up to like a 14-point lead.
It's funny how that keeps happening to us, right? You'd almost say that that would be one of the keys this week is like, okay, let's not let them get out to an early lead.
I think one of the things we alluded to earlier was the fact that it's another Gus Johnson, Aqib Talib game. So we got that to look forward to at least.
And I really did enjoy that this week. I know I mentioned it earlier, but, you know, really, really good insights. And I don't know, they seemed like they were having fun too.
Yeah, I mean, I can't overlook. Aqib Talib does like butcher a few names quite a bit, but what can we say? We do it a fair bit on this podcast as well.
It's true. And also Aqib Talib does also come down with the negative thing of like every time I think of him, I think of him just absolutely poking somebody in the eyes.
Or stealing Michael Crabtree's train.
Like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
Apparently he was wearing that.
Really?
During the game, yeah.
That's wild.
Or maybe that was just an internet joke that I've fallen foul of. I don't know.
Well, on the field, celebrities, I guess you could say, the Jacksonville Jaguars have Trevor Lawrence, who is still starting, despite the fact that he lost 2 games in a row for the first time ever in his career, at least.
That's just wild, though, isn't it? He's gone through high school, college, never lost a game. Probably even played lower than that and never lost.
It's the same with Kyler Murray as well, right? Or there was like a whole bunch of stuff where he just hadn't lost.
Yeah, well, he'd rarely tasted defeat, that sort of thing. I mean, at least he's winning now, that's one thing.
That's the reality of the NFL draft, I suppose. You know, you come in and you just, you know, you're the best players and you go into the worst teams and you gotta lift them up, you know?
Yeah, exactly, because obviously good teams aren't going to be picking 1 and 2, that sort of thing.
Exactly. But yeah, so far he's got 4 touchdowns and 5 interceptions and only 450 passing yards, which Kyler Murray almost did in a single game, which puts him like the 30th QB out of the QB ratings on ESPN.
Yeah, that's not a good sign, is it? Definitely not.
No. I mean, that being said, like we mentioned it before, and I think it's worth reiterating that this is this kind of game that you can't go into complacently. We've seen it time and time again with the Cardinals, especially in the early season, where we go in, we make some big games against big teams, and arguably you could say the Titans are probably a big team there. The Minnesota Vikings, we were, you know, favorites for, and we only won by 1 point. It would be a very, very Cardinals thing to do to come into this game overconfident and lose it to, you know, the odds on, or the lose it to a team that we absolutely should be beating, put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, obviously, 2-0 is a really good start for the Cardinals, but 3-0 is a lot better, especially the 3 tough games coming up afterwards.
And I think especially with a game like this, you know, these are the games that you really, really can't afford to throw away if you're looking for a title.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially in our division, you know.
Yeah, like you say, it's definitely a Cardinals thing to like give these cheap wins away or like turn a win into a loss when you really shouldn't be doing so.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that being said, I think that probably the game plan or like the thing that I would like to see most from the Cardinals in this coming up game is to control the game from the outset. Because I don't think I'm cursing us here. I do think this is as much of a statement of fact as you can get about these things in the NFL. We are going in as the better team. We absolutely should be winning. And therefore, from the outset, we need to establish control over the game. You need to get in there. You need to be ensuring that you get their offense off the field. Any yardage you're giving them is minimum. And then when you do go on and you do drive down, make them substantial drives, make them drives that last, but are still, you know, marching down the field. And make sure that you don't leave the red zone without a score.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, 6 p.m. start, we definitely need a good start, not like sloppy penalties here, there, and everywhere, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And, you know, I think as much as Minnesota played really, really well last week, one of the big reasons that that game got away from us in the way that it did is because we just had a poor start. You know, we gave up a touchdown in two plays, and that put us on the back foot for the entire time. You know, it was only in the third quarter or something, like late in the third quarter, that we ever gained the lead.
I'm not really sure who they've really got as danger men, because obviously they, in preseason, they lost the big addition of Travis Etienne at running back. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's down to James Robinson and whoever else they've got at running back.
Whatever men they can scrape from North Florida.
And wide receiver, they've got some decent weapons, because they've got Marvin Jones, who I really like. They've got DJ Chark. I think LaVisca Chenault, although he might be injured with a shoulder, so he might be out.
Honestly, I think almost the biggest danger is Urban Meyer being, like, literally fired at halftime.
Now that will be something.
As I said, like, it's not a team to be underestimated, and you listed a few names there of guys who can play really well. And I think as well their defensive line, you know, has produced some good play and stuff like that, especially at the end of last year. So there's nothing, you know, it's not worth sniffing at these things. Like, being a Cardinals fan has conditioned me to go into these things like in a worried state of mind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you should never know what's going to happen, do you?
Exactly.
It's best to be not too overconfident, because they usually get burnt then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that being said, don't get me wrong, I'm still predicting us for the win. I think we can win this, and I think we should win this.
So what are you saying for a win then?
So my last couple of predictions have been like way too low for the scores of the Cardinals. So I think this time I'm going to have to go into the 30s, and I think I'll probably go with like 34 for the Cardinals, and then let's say 17 for the Jaguars. I think that's like well within reach as a like winning margin, as a scoreline. As I said, as long as we get in there and we control the game properly from the outset.
As I said, don't think we should be going into this too overconfident. But I do think the Cardinals are going to put up 45 points and they're going to get 20.
Oh, dear.
It's going to happen sometime. We're going to put up 40 on someone.
You know, it's really not that far outside the realms of probability, is it? It's not that far. Like, we know this offense has the star power to put up 50 points. They can do it.
It's just a case of whether they will do it.
Yeah, precisely. That's the hard part. As I said, it's a case of making sure that you've got that full control. You don't shoot yourself in the foot with silly penalties. You don't shoot yourself in the foot with silly picks or turnovers or whatever. And you just get in there and get the job done. And I think that's almost the attitude the team needs to go into this with, right? It's like, all right, we know we can do this. We get in, get our heads down for 60 minutes. And come out the other side with a win.
Definitely. And before we move on to the end of the podcast, we all got some plugs to do as usual. So if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang. If you're on Facebook, like us at facebook.com/British Bird Gang. And also join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Bird Gang. Buy British Bird Gang merch at britishbirdgang.tmall.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave a review, share, you know, tell everyone about the podcast, boost our listening numbers, that sort of thing. And I think that's it for the plugs. So as always, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Yeah, thanks for listening and cheerio.
Hopefully we have another win to talk about next week. We'll see.
That'd be exciting.